Hello, everyone, and welcome to Greater LA. My name is Luis Alfaro, and I am a playwright and professor of theater at the University of Southern California, which seems appropriate because today I am understudying Steve Chatakis, your regular host. He'll be back on Monday. Did you know that there are over 200 professional theater companies in LA? In a region of over 10 million people where we speak 224 different languages in over 400 neighborhoods, there is a lot of expression of culture and community, and art is a medium we use to tell our stories. Today, we are going to focus on two vibrant movements making great strides, both nationally and in Greater LA. Native American plays and playwrights, and a new generation of Asian American artists, and plays telling their story in a whole new way. Today, I'll be talking with artists in both communities. This is probably a good moment to acknowledge that KCRW sits on the ancestral land of the Tongva, Chumash, and Kitse people. With me to talk about what is happening in Native theater in LA, I have two guests. Larissa Fasthorse, a member of the Sichangu Lakota Nation, lives here in LA, but was raised in South Dakota. She's currently celebrating her Broadway debut in a critically acclaimed production of her comedy, The Thanksgiving Play. Larissa, welcome.
Yay, it's so great to be talking with you, Luis.
Me too. I'm so thrilled to have you. And also with us is Delana Studi, a Cherokee actor who, along with her father, retraced the 900-mile path known as the Trail of Tears, which her ancestors followed when forced to leave their homelands. This was the source for her current performance, And So We Walked. Delana, welcome.
Thank you. It's so good to be here.
I am so happy to have the both of you. You represent Los Angeles in the most extraordinary way. And I can't believe this is maybe the first time I'm talking to Larissa since she became a huge Broadway star. So maybe I'll start with you, Larissa. Not only are you the first female Native American playwright to be produced on Broadway, but you will also soon be the first Native American writer to be produced at the Mark Tate Perform at the Music Center in downtown LA as well. What does this moment of national emergence for Native American theater feel like to you, and why did it take us so long?
Wow, that's a big question, Luis. We could talk about that all day. It feels, you know, so many things. I mean, first Native American playwright that we know of on Broadway was the great Lynn Riggs, and I always want to uplift his name. But unfortunately, that was back in the first half of the last century. And now we're in another, well into another century before we had another known Native American playwright on Broadway. So, you know, it's exciting. It's also like that cannot happen again, you know, and that is something I'm working really hard with a lot of people all around the country to be sure that can't happen again. It can't be another century before we have Native American playwright on Broadway. And it can't just be me. that doesn't count. So I'm really, you know, doing a lot of work with a lot of organizations and with people in New York and across the nation. And also like in Los Angeles, right? We've done well. We've had a really long history, as Delana will talk about, of Native theater in Los Angeles, including with myself. But, you know, we need to be able to be on all of the stages and be on as many stages as we want to be. So being able to be on LA's biggest stage, well, second biggest stage, the Center Theater Group, with a new play that was commissioned by them that is entirely around local Los Angeles folks, local team working on it, and a bunch of Native local actors. In fact, two of our actors, which I can't say who they are yet, but they're both Southern California Native actors, is really exciting. And I can't wait for Los Angeles to see those folks.
Well, this is so amazing because we're talking about first, but also this idea that we don't want to be first, right? We want to be part of a great long tradition in the theater, but also in art, but also in culture and community. And I love the way that you combine both your activism and your playwriting into one thing. And I guess, you know, there's this part of me that feels like that's a huge, huge challenge, but it's also one you undertake with a great, great enthusiasm, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things about being an Indigenous person is you're never just you. You're always part of we. And that's something I take incredibly seriously and is with me every single day with everything I do, that I'm part of we. I don't represent all Native people, of course, but I do represent Native people. And it's important to bring community with me everywhere I go. And I take that very seriously. It's a huge responsibility and it's exhausting. I can't imagine, cannot imagine just showing up at a theater and writing a play. And that's all I do. That's not yet where we are in American theater. I still have to do so much work to make sure the door is wide open for the next Native artist to make sure that we're constantly pulling Native art, other Native artists into the creative team, into the production team, making sure that Native audiences are welcome and have access to coming to these spaces where they've been excluded for so long. There's so much work to do, but the exciting thing is it's my honor, right? So being the privilege of first means I have the honor of getting to do all of this work for the next seven generations. So seven generations from now, doing all this work will seem ridiculous to Native artists. They'll be like, why would you do all that? Because they don't have to. They've never even had to think of it.
I love it. I think a lot about, as a Chicano artist, how I always talk about how I come into a theater and not only bring my play, but you have to bring the audience with you, right? And so that idea is so extraordinary. And speaking of the we, Delana, your piece is entitled And So We Walked, which has been presented around the country and also abroad. And I guess I want to ask you your experience of telling your story to so many different kinds of people. What has been the reception for you?
It's been well received. What's fascinating about it is it's a Cherokee story about, you know, me walking the Trail of Tears with my dad and collecting the history along the way. But there's a lot of people in what is now called America that have been displaced, that have been assimilated, that have been told to learn English and disregard their culture and their language. And this story, you know, my father is a boarding school survivor, and he had his Cherokee-ness literally beaten out of him, and how he still retained his culture and his identity, and how he was able to rear Cherokee children. It resonates with so many different folks.
Larissa, the Thanksgiving play has also been staged all over the place, not just on Broadway. And it's had a kind of wonderful journey around the regional theaters. And has it been the same for you, your experience of sharing this play all over the place as well?
Yeah, I mean, mine's a little easier because it's written to white people. So it's written, you know, for white folks, well-meaning white folks. I took the challenge of writing a play basically to my audience and saying, hey, folks, you know, you claim you want to be allies, you claim you want to work with us, so here's where you're failing, now let's do better.
The both of you write very difficult material in very, very, very welcoming ways. You know, Larissa, it's satire. You know, Delana, I was thinking about your last play, just sitting in a reading and laughing, but also it was a play about abduction, right, on the reservations. And I was thinking so much about how you bring humor into the experience. A writing trauma also is a way of telling a story that needs to be told. But the both of you seem to have figured out a way to be able to tell that story in a way that welcomes us in before we get the gut punch, right? And Delana, do you see yourself as a writer that writes in lightness as a way of being able to tell us trauma?
I honestly see that as a way of dealing with trauma. I feel like I've learned from my family and from a lot of Native cultures, actually, that we deal with trauma through our humor. I think that's one of the reasons why we're still here, and, you know, that's why we're so resilient, is we can make light of a bad situation. It doesn't mean we diminish the situation, but we also have to realize that if we can't find a way to laugh and keep our hope alive, we're not going to move forward.
That's beautiful. Larissa, I think of you as a very wicked writer. Do you agree with that notion?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm a comedy writer, right? I now have seven plays this year, and all of them are comedies. So, you know, comedy is our culture. It's like, you know, we say we've used it for resiliency. We didn't. It's like, no, it is our culture. And it always was, and it continues to be.
I love that. You know, in Chicano culture, we used to, you know, we'd have Day of the Dead, right? Día de los Muertos. And when I was growing up, my father used to say, you know, we laugh at death because when it comes, it's not so funny. And so, you know, of course, you have to use humor, right, in that beautiful, beautiful way. Delana, you're also run Native Voices, a program over at the Autry Museum, and it's coming up, that summer festival. Can you tell us a little bit about it and what its focus is this year?
Oh, goodness. Well, our summer festival, our playwrights retreat, is we solicit, you know, we ask people to submit their plays, and then we have a national panel, and we choose anywhere between two or three. And so this year we're doing two plays. We're doing a beautiful play, which I'm surprised because it's based about my hometown, which I don't find beautiful, but this playwright has found a way to tell the story that makes me very happy. The playwrights Maddox Pennington, and they are fantastic. In fact, they've written a whole trilogy about my small town, which is crazy to me. And the other playwright is Dustin Tamakara, who's written this gorgeous intergenerational piece called Comanche Girl on the Moon. In fact, it was our first commission with our Mellon Grant, and that's another thank you to Larissa for referring us to that program. So we're very excited to be able to share those two stories. But Comanche Girl on the Moon is dealing with grief after a young girl loses her grandmother and how she seeks to find community outside of school with her people, with her heritage, and with her grandmother's spirit. And CST, Central Standard Time, is a story about a small town in Oklahoma and someone coming from Los Angeles to find out more about their roots and also encountering what it's like to live in small town Oklahoma. So they're both beautiful stories, and I can't wait to share them.
Beautiful. So I'd love to ask you, Delano, because we're running out of time here, what's your next project? And I know you're going to Playpen, right? Is that your next?
Yes.
Could you tell us a little bit about it? Because it's a great story.
Oh, yes. My next project is called I is for Invisible. We actually got to do a workshop of it at the Kirk Douglas. Thanks to you, Luis. And also thanks again to Larissa for referring to me to that program. And it's a play about, I jokingly say it's the Native version of August Osage County. It's what would happen to a Native family if someone in Oklahoma went missing. And it deals with tribal jurisdiction, but it also tells the story in a very Cherokee way, in the fact that our cosmology is very present and our ancestors are constantly among us. And it's about a family dealing with grief and the different ways that we cope.
Ooh, thank you so much. It's such an honor to have the both of you here. It went way too fast, but Larissa Fastworth, playwright and Angelino, don't let the Broadway fool you. Thank you so much for speaking with me today. And Delana Studi, Artistic Director of Native Voices at the Authory, thank you so much for your time as well. It is a pleasure to have the both of you here. Thank you for being on Greater LA.
Thank you.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Back now with more of Greater LA. I'm Luis Alfaro. Today we're unpacking LA's diverse theater scene, and we can't do that without giving a shout-out to East West Players, the nation's largest and longest-running Asian-American theater company. For nearly 60 years, this little Tokyo-based theater has shined a spotlight on Asian-American writers and actors, with plays that explore everything from the history of Japanese internment camps to race relations and a modern-day beauty supply shop. They blazed a trail for more Asian Americans to share their stories on stage. And now, Asian American theater is exploding in Los Angeles, accounting for some of the most innovative and moving productions at theaters throughout the city and beyond. With us today is Snehal Desai, the longtime artistic director of East West Players, who will soon be moving on to become artistic director of Center Theater Group. Yay! The largest regional theater in the Western United States, I believe. And Charlie James Oh, a Korean-American playwright whose new play, Coleman 72, just premiered at South Coast Repertory. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you, Luis. So glad to be here.
Thank you for having me.
Before I move on, I just have to say, you know, it is one of the great pleasures to sit at a new play and be as moved and as charmed and as, you know, gut belly laughs as I had at Coleman 72. So I'm just so happy to have the both of you. But I'd like to start with Snehal. And before we get into it, I just want to congratulate you on the new post because it is huge. You will be the first person of color ever to lead Center Theater Group, but you feel no pressure, right?
Yes, not at all. Not at all.
Good for you.
Especially not with that intro. Thank you so much, Luis. It is such an honor to be CTG's next artistic director and to kind of continue that conversation with between East West Players and the many other theaters of color in Los Angeles. As we look forward. So I'm very excited for that moment.
Good. And you've worked at East West Players, which is really historic, for 6 years now. And I would love to ask you, just what do you think about this role that you've played in carving out space for Asian American stories on stage? You've seen it now over a number of years. Asian American stories are really having a kind of resurgence nationally. Do you feel that?
Yeah, I definitely do. And I think it's tied to kind of both the critical mass of Asian American artists that are out there, that are working, that are producing work. And I also think the other thing that's really interesting is we're finally starting to break apart this kind of Asian American monolith. And folks are starting to recognize that, oh, there are Japanese American plays and Korean American plays. And it's not just, you know, there's not just one slot that we're going to put the Asian American play in every season.
I love that what you're saying about this broad umbrella, because I think very often as a Chicano, a Mexican American in Los Angeles, you know, one of the largest communities in LA is our Central American community. And we, you know, we often get lumped into, you know, one experience. But I'm wondering, when you're presenting a very specific kind of play to a very specific audience, how do you keep that diverse in terms of allowing audiences to hear, even within a community like the Asian American community, their story, but also how do you keep inviting everybody into the room?
Yeah, and it's, as you know, it's through specificity that we get universality with our storytelling, right? So that there's something in your work that I always connect to, whether I'm a part of the Chicano tradition or not, Luis. And so I think for us, it's about making sure that these are well-told stories that are specific, that they're giving voice to a community or individuals whose stories we haven't heard on our stages. And so I think that's a part of the dialogue. And then the other thing is, I think intersectionality is also key, right? In our world, particularly here in Los Angeles, none of us only, I don't only talk to Asian Americans all day long, right? It's not. And so, you know, I think the other big thing that I've been really trying to foster at East West Players is, where is the play where the three of us are in conversation, right? And if it's not happening, then let's commission it, or let's workshop it, or let's develop it, or let's put that idea out there. So I think that's one thing. I think the other thing that I have been really trying to foster a dialogue around is plays that center, that are comedic and that center joy for our communities of color. Because I think so many times also folks think that the issues by people, the plays by, new plays by people of color always need to be serious or drama or need to be, you know what I mean? And I think the other thing is, well, we also laugh a lot, Luis, you know, and we want to bring joy to our communities and to audiences. And so where are those works? And if they're not happening, how can we support them?
That's fantastic. You know, in the Latino community, we even have an initiative, and we just had a huge conference last year around a comedy plays in the community, right? Because that is one of the biggest complaints, right? Everything's a drama. Everything is important. Everything we want to get to. But can we laugh along the way? So beautiful. And I laughed at Coleman 72. So I just want to jump over to Charlie for a moment and ask about this beautiful Korean-American family's journey to Los Angeles from the Midwest. And I'm going to play a little clip from the play, if that's okay. Here we go.
Pass the lemon drops.
In a bit.
Isn't this fun? This is your great American adventure.
You said that already.
Because it's true. Think of the sights you'll see. Think of the culture you'll experience. Think of the candy. Was the last time that we bought you candy?
As a treat or a bribe?
What's going on in that scene, Charlie?
So, Coleman 72 is a play that is very loosely based on a real road trip that my Korean side of the family, I'm mixed race, I'm half Korean, half Irish, took from Milwaukee, Wisconsin to Los Angeles, California, and back in the 1970s. And so this is that scene is a early moment in the play as these three children have been dragged by their parents into their car with a Coleman trailer behind them as they are setting out on the journey that they were not necessarily prepared for.
I loved it. And one of the things I really loved about it that I wanted to bring up with you was, I thought it was such a beautifully observed play about intergenerational relationships, that father and daughter, you know, I had to go to my car and just kind of weep it out for a moment after. And partly that has to do with the great, I think one of the great underrated actors of LA is Tess Lena, and she
incredible.
Was extraordinary.
Incredible.
But also, I just wanted to ask you, because, you know, you are writing an intergenerational story. Mm-hmm. Where did you get that insight to write such an extraordinary, complicated father character?
Thank you. Well, it came from a mixture of personal experience and research and talking to my family members, to my other Asian American friends, but also friends just in general. I talk to a lot of people who are children of immigrants. And it's incredible how, you know, not every cultural experience of being between first and second generation and third generation immigrants are different given cultural specificity, but they also all rhyme, you know, they're, and there are these incredible common threads, which, and it's been really gratifying bringing the play to South Coast to be able to be in the audience and talk to audiences afterwards. And I mean, it definitely has been resonant with Asian American community, with the Asian American community and the Korean American community that has been coming to see the play, but also people coming to me and going, my father's from Jamaica. And I had a relationship just like that with him. Or there was this incredible moment, I think on our opening night, where a woman came up to me in her 70s or 80s. And she said, my father is was a Holocaust survivor. And he was just as hard as me as the father in this play. And I still loved him. And she shared that with me. And it was incredibly moving. And I had a teacher in college, playwriting teacher, who said, you know that a play is working when people come up to you afterwards and they don't talk about the play. They just start telling you about their lives. And it's been really fun to hear for people to start sharing their own stories and thinking about their own families. It's been very moving and surprising in ways.
Well, I agree 100%. It was the most moving thing. And one of the joys of, like, you know, being on socials is watching how, you know, the Asian American community showing up for this play big time. Snehal, I wanted to talk with you. I know you're moving into this gigantic job, and I know that this has been a very difficult period in a field that has, you know, a tough time bouncing back after the pandemic. There's always finances at play, but I guess what I really want to dig in with you is, you know, there's mission and then there's vision. And I wonder, you know, because we don't ask you a lot about your own art, what are you excited about as an artist? Where do you see a kind of like bigger vision idea for yourself in the kind of work you want to do, but also the kind of work you want to see?
You know, I constantly come back to this question, particularly post-pandemic, of what role art plays in our lives and also how our theaters and our artistic spaces can be civic spaces, right? A spaces for civic dialogue. And for me right now, I keep thinking about how we continue to live our lives increasingly in echo chambers, right? And less interacting with folks who have differing opinions. And how can we create a space in theater where the work is at the center of starting some of the dialogue and the conversations we need around healing, around moving forward from this pandemic, about empathy and trust? I also think a lot about you know, what we need in this moment. We were just talking about laughter, right? And I think to change minds, you have to first affect hearts. That's the way in. And so how are we going to create, you know, welcome folks back in and create that? And then the other thing is, how are we going to welcome folks into these institutions where they traditionally haven't felt at home or felt safe or felt okay to laugh? I'm really interested in folks who are breaking the boundaries of kind of the traditional norms of theater, who are breaking us out of our spaces, and who are also innovating the form.
Well, you know, I could talk with the both of you forever, but of course we're on live radio. So I just wanted to thank you, Charlie James O. His new play, Coleman 72, is running through this weekend, May 14th, at South Coast Repertory. The new 405 expansion makes it very easy to get there. And if one production is closing, another one is opening, and that is Snehal Desai is the incoming artistic director of Center Theater Group. And I am thrilled for you, my friend. I'm excited. And we lift you up in community because there's a lot of hope right behind you.
Thank you so much, Louise.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for today. Tomorrow at this time, it'll be KCRW's The Business. NPR's Eric Deggans talks to director Alan Hughes about his five-part Tupac documentary series, Dear Mama. That's Friday at 1 and 6 p.m. Next week here on Greater LA, Steve Chitakis will be back with you with stories about thousands of new apartments coming online from Measure HHH, efforts to restore the endangered steelhead trout in Malibu, and the Renaissance Fair. That's all next week. You can connect with everyone here at Greater LA on our website, kcrw.com/GLA. You can give us your feedback and share story ideas and get the podcast as well. kcrw.com/GLA. Juliana Mayo, Zoe Matthew, Sonia Geis, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Christine Comito, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordal all helped put the show together today. I'm Luis Alfaro. It's been a pleasure to serve. I am so happy to be out of here. Thanks for listening.